Good morning. This is Tracy Hales Best, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM. Today I'll be talking with Ross Van Dusen, children's book writer, novelist, illustrator. Good morning, Ross. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Tracy. How are you?
I'm good. So you are an author of children's books, but also you have novels, are an illustrator.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, I loved Crocodog in the Evil Forest, and I was really impressed when I found out that you also did all the drawings for it. So tell the audience a little bit about Crocodog.
Okay, well, the Crocodog, it's a series. I've only got two, but I'm hoping there might be a third. The first book is How the Crocodog Came to Be, and then the second book is The Crocodog in the Evil Forest.
Uh-huh.
The Crocodog actually started as an animated film over 50 years ago.
Wow.
I had a job as an art director in an ad agency, and I was working on it as a film at night. And back 50 years ago, that was the time of Godzilla and Rodan and Mothra, you know, all those atomic monsters.
Right.
And as a young man in my film, Crocodog would just eat stuff, you know, buildings, cars, boats, tanks, etc. I didn't see this having any dialogue, just crashes, grunts, and stuff. And then finally he would eat a blimp and then float away. In my 20s, I thought that was funny. In my mind, it didn't need a story, just chaos and destruction and a funny ending.
Right.
But I was young, and so, yeah, I came to realize that it needed more than that. But so anyway, back then I started making drawings, and standard animation is 24 drawings per second. So I do 24 drawings to be shot on twos, meaning two frames per drawing, and that would take about 2 seconds of animation. So I got out my little 8mm camera, and I shot a test. I put a drawing under the light, click, click, put the next drawing in, click, click, and so on. Got, you know, 48 clicks on my little camera. And then in those days, you sent it off to the drugstore to be developed.
Right, and, yes.
You know, so, and a couple of weeks later, I got this little piece of film back, and I put it in the projector and turned it on, and I couldn't believe how fast it went by. It's like weeks and weeks of work, and then it's gone in 2 seconds, and I had no idea how short 2 seconds would seem, and I realized then that a 10-minute film would take years.
Yes.
So I stuck to my day job. I just put it in a drawer and forgot about it for a while. And then when I retired from advertising, I dug out all my early drawings, and Crocodog was among them. Even by then, I knew that animation was out. I'd be 100 years old before it was finished. But I realized it would be a pretty good children's book. And I was also mature enough by then to know it needed an actual story, not just a bunch of crashes. And the story was simple enough. You start with a puppy, something bad has to happen, and then he becomes Crocodog, and then something has to save him. It's basically the Hulk for children, 4 and 5-year-olds. Anyway, you know, he gets in trouble and becomes the Hulk and destroys things. Well, so, you know, that's what I decided to do. My publisher saw it as a story about bullying. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it that way, but I guess it is sort of.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I originally wrote it as prose, and I read it out loud, and it seemed a little flat. And my wife Jean read it out loud, and it seemed flat to her too. I'm very lucky that my wife Jean is an ex-English teacher, so I have a built-in editor and a great sounding board. So we, you know, talked about it back and forth about what to do. And I knew that moms and dads are most likely going to be reading it out loud.
Right.
And so I tried a few different things, but it never just seemed to come alive until I rewrote it in rhyme. And then, you know, reading it out in rhyme sounded a lot better. So that's how it came about. And it was the first book I did. And then I did a whole bunch more after that. Well, I found these drawings of a snowflake maker. It was my odd sketch of this thing that would stamp out snowflakes. And I had another drawing of an echo tower and a lightning maker and all these just kind of funny Rube Goldberg devices.
Right.
I had a rainbow machine that would spray color ink in the air. And And I thought, at the time I made the drawings, I really had no plan for them.
Mm-hmm.
And my first thought was, I could just make a book of funny machines, you know, just here's how rainbows. And then I thought, well, in the spirit of children's books,
right,
maybe it would be a way to engage a child's fantasy about how do you think a snowflake comes about, and then talk about, you know, maybe they're made in China, maybe this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've read that book to kids, they all start shaking their, no, they're not made in China. You know, the kids are smart. They get onto you pretty fast.
They do.
And I dice them. I say, are you sure? No, that's not the way it's done. And then in the middle of the book, I decided to put a little actual science. You know, no, that,
mm-hmm,
yeah, I agree. It's not how it's done. Here's how it really happens. You know, two atoms, H2O, all that. And I kept it as simple as I could,
mm-hmm,
because I knew 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds are going to be, you know, reading it or having it read to them.
Right.
And then I checked it with a chemical engineer, a science teacher, and one of the TV weathermen.
Wow.
I had them read them and make sure that my science was accurate enough for little kids. And then the book starts with a little fantasy, and then a little science in the middle, but not too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And then back to a kind of a reprieve of the fantasy to finish
right.
the book. And I decided, since the rhyming worked so well in Crocodog, it made it come off the page better, from at least to my ears. I thought, well, I'll do the snowflake thing and the rainbow thing and the lightning thing in rhyme, and that seemed to work pretty well too.
Right.
So I've sort of carved out this corner where I have to do rhyme in my children's book.
Oh, you're stuck with that now.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
But how fun! So how many?
Yeah, they're fun. I'm going to slow down a little now. I've been going like crazy for about 5 or 6 years now, and I need to take a break. So I'm also a fine artist, and
mm-hmm,
so I'm taking a break from children's books for a couple of months. And I'm going to do some painting and things.
Oh, good.
But I'll come back to the books.
Good.
I would love to do a third Crocodog.
Yes.
I have how he started,
mm-hmm,
and then how he gets lost in the evil forest.
Right.
And then it hasn't come to me where it's going after that.
Okay.
Haven't figured out. I mean, does he go to a circus and, you know, and prevent a rogue elephant from wrecking the crocodile? I don't know where it's going, so I've just got to wait till a little gestation period and let it percolate for a while, and something will jump out at me.
And he'll let you know, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They have a way of doing that.
Yeah, something will happen that,
yes,
that will cause me to say, oh, I know what I can do.
Right. Well, how long does it take you to draw one of these books?
Oh, well, each drawing is probably 2 or 3 days.
Mm.
I start with a rough sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And then generally I draw it small, and then I blow it up to put in detail. I do a pencil rough,
mm-hmm,
and then I actually put a book together with pencil roughs to make sure that it flows and the words. And because I put the words in the pictures, I have to design the pictures. That's my art direction background.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
that, you know, there's a place for the words, and yet the pictures still look right.
Right.
And once I've got it figured out in pencil, then I go back and start ink drawings of each of the pages. And there I do them in line, and then I do the color in actually colored pencils.
Oh, my.
I would love to do them a watercolor. It would be faster.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not very good with watercolor.
Sure.
I find that doing the color in pencil, I make fewer mistakes, and I can, you know, it's a much slower way to render, and so I don't have to go back and do things over. And then when I get done, I put it together in Photoshop, the pictures. A lot of times I'll draw part of the drawing, and I'll want to add something later, so I'll do separate little drawings and put them together in Photoshop and make to finish the page. Or the actual drawing, it turns out the type didn't quite fit right, so I have to reshape some of the drawings in Photoshop. And then I go to InDesign, which is a program that's designed to put books together.
Right.
And I put it together there, and that's what I send off to my publisher,
my,
who turns it into a book.
And it's gorgeous. It really is. And well, I like that even though it's written for children, there's some things in here for adults. Like on Hank's hot dog van.
Yes.
Cheaper than steak, tastier than chicken.
There you go. Yeah, I love forgot that. What I wrote. Yeah. And I did a children's book for little three-year-olds, four-year-olds,
uh-huh,
about Lyle, an elephant that gets caught in a tree. He's a big blue elephant. He's this little tiny tree. He's a mouse, and he can't get down. And he has to spend the night in the tree, and then the fire truck comes to rescue him. And he gets on the ladder, and they have to go to a fire. So now there's this big blue elephant on this ladder sticking in the air, and the fire truck racing down the street. You know, it's kind of fun, and it's in rhyme as well. And then, of course, they get to the fire, and, you know, there's a lady on the second floor, and she's going to roast. Well, he's on the ladder, mm-hmm, and he sucks up this water fountain and puts the fire and her out in one mighty blow. And, you know, and so there's a line in there for Mom that says, the lady was saved, but he ruined her hair.
Perfect.
And then he said the house was all singed, but it was still there. And then, so he becomes a hero. So
right.
It's a story about overcoming fear and becoming a hero.
Right.
Which is good for little kids.
It is.
Yeah.
And so Crocodog is the same way. It could be construed as a story of, you know, gather your strength and you can overcome the odds or something.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the idea of a poor little puppy that has no place to sleep and gets picked on and reacts is a pretty common, I think even little kids can understand that if you get pushed around, you're going to get mad, you know.
Right. Can you read us a little bit from
this? Sure. Why don't I read how the crocodile came to be, how it started, anyway.
Oh, okay, that'd be great.
Okay. There was a little puppy that lived off Mean Street down in Bat Alley somewhere. It was near the end of the day, and the little puppy needed a place to stay. He thought he might sleep in that box over there. He was too little to see that something was in it, much bigger than he. Now, in the picture, this little dog is in the middle of the street, and there's these junky old cardboard boxes and stuff, and there's this sort of big black shape in the box.
Mm.
And then when the puppy peeked in, a big old black cat gave him a thwack. Yikes! He couldn't sleep there, and he would never come back. And then it goes on to, so he can't sleep in that box. So he looked over yonder and thought that he might sleep under that dumpster tonight. Now, there's a picture of a dumpster and these kind of angry-looking eyes underneath it. He was about to give it a shot. Then he saw those mean, angry eyes and thought, maybe not. And so it goes on that he can't find a place. It's starting to get dark. He scratches on a door. And they tell him to go away. And he finally finds a little place in between two buildings. And he curls up inside his box. You know, he curled up inside. It was cozy enough, but still he was sad because things in Bat Alley were always so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Things would be better tomorrow, he hoped. He'd wake up quite early and find something to eat. Then he fell asleep thinking some food would be neat. So then the next page, the cat is biting his tail, and it says he got up quite early, just as he planned. But when he tried to creep past the nasty old cat, the cat bit his tail and pulled it and bent it and stretched it out flat.
Yeah.
And then it goes on. He gets kicked by an old guy with crummy shoes, and he finally finds some food, and the big dog takes it away. And now he's getting bigger and badder and madder. And this is when he grows into the crocodog. Back in his box, he felt very strange. He was no longer a puppy. He was starting to change. He noticed his paws, and he noticed his claws. Whatever it was, he wasn't the same. When that mean old man kicked him again, he chomped through the leather and bit the man's toe. He felt really bad about biting that shoe. He knew biting was wrong, but he didn't know what else to do. You know, then the old man runs away. The old man was having a fit, hopping away because he got bit. And wouldn't you know, he called the dog catcher. Uh-oh. And then next picture is the dog catcher is throwing a net over this big angry dog now. So the dog catcher arrived just before night. What he saw was a big yellow dog that was ready to fight. Now the dog catcher was so frightened his heart almost stopped, but it was his job, so he let the net drop. A net, thought the dog, are you kidding me? So then the next picture shows the dog catcher racing away with the back of his truck chomped off. He chewed up the net and chomped on the truck and spit out the bumper, all twisted and bent. The dog catcher stepped on the gas, and away he went. You know, and then the dog is standing there, and there's two little mice horrified by all this going on. Things had always been bad in Bat Alley, but they were about to get worse. So now he's in his, now the little puppy had grown so big, he wasn't even a dog, not in the least. He was a croc-a-dog, a beast. And nobody kicks or scratches or fights or throws a net over a croc-a-dog that bites. And then the next page is this big old tank rolling down the street, and the people in the houses looking out the windows all look scared. And the copy says, so they call for the army to send in a tank. And then on the next page, the crew is walking away, and the tank is in shreds. And what do you know? He chewed up the tank but let the crew go. So then the army called for the Air Force to send in a blimp. And he chewed up the blimp and spit out the crew. Now nobody knew what to do. And that's where, you know, my original thought about having the dog eat a blimp and float away, but I just couldn't give up on that drawing of a crocodile opening up and eating a big old blimp, you know. And then now he's really big, and he's filling the street, Mean Street and Bat Alley. And there's this little boy that's been in the window in some of these drawings in the corner. Mm-hmm. And it says, Elwood had been watching, and he was very, very sad. He knew what to do, and it wouldn't be bad. And then on the next page, here's this big old yellow crocodile staring him down, and he's this little Elwood. And it says, he stood in the alley as brave as could be, and when the crocodile met him with a growl and a hiss, Elwood surprised him with a hug and a kiss. And here's the next picture, is Elwood kissing him on the nose, and there's this stunned look on the dog's face. And now the crocodile had never, not ever been kissed. Kindness and niceness were things that he'd missed. It was the only affection that he'd ever felt, and his anger immediately started to melt. And then next page shows the little crocodile shrinking down to a lovely little puppy, and all the people in the buildings are cheering because the crocodile is gone. And it says he shrank down to normal to the alley surprise. Not back to a puppy, but to a nice little doggy with love in his eyes. And then on the last page, the happily ever after page, it says, here he is sitting with the dog in his lap, and the dog's tail is wagging, and they both have their eyes closed with big smiles. And it says, Elwood was a hero, plus he wasn't alone. He would keep little doggy and give him a home. Now, Elwood was happy with his new best friend, Frank. That's what he named him after he shrank. And Frank's funny name did cause some laughter, but Elwood and Frank lived happily ever after.
Very good. And it picks it up in Crocodog and the Evil Forest.
In Crocodog and the Evil Forest, it starts off right where they ended up in the backyard. You know, the dog gets in trouble again by sneaking into the truck.
So in the Crocodog, it was love that brought him back to being normal.
Yeah.
It's a good story.
Love and affection, yeah. Right. And of course, in the second book, Elwood saves him again at the end. And to me, that's just sort of a natural thing. There have been lots of movies about boys and their dogs, you know,
right.
Lassie and Rin Tin Tin and all that. And it just, I don't know, it feels right, doesn't it, to have the relationship between a boy and a dog.
It is.
It's such a natural, loving thing.
It is. But you've won awards for your
team. Yeah, I was in the advertising business for a lot of years, and they're very happy to give out awards. They give their advertising shows all over the place, and I won my fair share.
Mm-hmm.
I won a couple of Clios and a couple of international awards, British International and the IBAs and Andys and Addies and all that stuff. And when I decided to do children's books, I had no idea that they're almost as award happy as the advertising business.
Oh.
You know, there are regional and national awards, and my publisher entered the What Makes a Snowflake and Rainbow in the Moonbeam Awards, and it won first place for nonfiction.
Congratulations.
And I was quite surprised. I was happy. I mean, it's great. And the Crocodile won first place in the regional thing here, and then there's a newspaper award show that it's regional and then national, and I've won that a couple of times too. So, yeah, I've been very lucky.
Well, congratulations!
To have found, you know, a venue that is going to see me through my retirement.
Yes,
this is not exactly what I thought I'd be doing when I retired.
I know.
I expected to, I don't play golf or anything, but I expected it to be less busy than I am.
Yes.
Of course, my wife Jean is the one that really, she steers the ship. I'm down in the engine room stoking the fire. But but she says, we're going to do this, and you have a school meeting here, and you're going to be on the radio there. And so it's really Jean that keeps this whole process going.
Well, I really like What Makes a Snowflake, too. And one thing about it in particular is at the end you have questions for adults.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, that was, I figured mom's got to read this book to the kid a couple of times, maybe more. I have a nephew or a niece that said, I'm so tired of reading that book. I read it every night for 2 weeks. And I thought, well, the reward for that would be just something for them at the end of the book.
Right.
I don't know if they'd read it to their kids or not, but they're funny, I thought.
They're very clever. So you also have a novel or novels?
I've written a bunch of novels. I originally, because I was in the advertising business, I did an awful lot of television commercials, and of course they have a beginning and a middle and an end, but they're only 60 seconds long or 30 seconds long. And so it seemed natural to write screenplays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you write little bitty, each commercial is a little bitty movie. And so I wrote a few screenplays and sent them off to some friends that I knew in Hollywood. I worked in L.A. for a while. I worked in San Francisco and I worked in New York. So I kind of knew some people in the business. And the first script I sent off, it was a war story. And they liked it, but they wanted me to, it was about World War II, about a broken down tank in a little Italian village and a bunch of GIs, and it's a standoff. Neither the Germans nor the GIs want to wreck the town, and there are a couple of ladies of the evening who come and go in the tank as often as they want,
mm-hmm.
to add a little bit of humor.
Right.
And in the end, of course, the town is saved. But hearing, oh, this, yeah, they're going to do it, or they want it to be Afghanistan or something. And I didn't think there was anything funny about Afghanistan or Iraq or Iran, or I thought World War II was far enough back that you could do a fairly lighthearted thing about it.
Right.
But I didn't. There's nothing funny about what's going on over there, so I refused to do it. And then I had maybe five or six scripts, and I thought, well, it takes so much money to get a movie done. And I talked to my friends in the movie business who've had movies done, and they say it just takes forever, and it's really hard, and you can go for years without getting your script published, and then, filmed, and then it might or might not happen. And I thought, well, the heck with that. I'll make them novels. I turned them into novels fairly easily. It turned out that my books are fairly dialogue heavy, because in movies, when you write a script for a movie, you don't describe the street that much, that carefully, because the director and the set designers and all those people, they're going to do that. So your description there is small town, dirt road, and then the GIs and the Germans have this conversation. Well, in a novel, you can't do that. So the hardest part of converting a screenplay into a novel is all of the descriptions of, roads, buildings, sunsets,
mm-hmm.
the church, the holes in the ceiling, all that stuff that they don't want you to put in a script,
right.
has to be in a novel.
That's true.
So I found myself with a whole lot of dialogue and not a whole lot of prose in between, and not a whole lot of description. So that took a while. A children's book takes maybe a month to produce.
I mean, mm-hmm.
All the drawings and the writing is fairly fast. You can sit down and and write out a children's story in a day or two. You actually can write it in an hour, but then you edit and improve it and stuff like that. In a couple of days, you've got a really nice, cute little story for kids. And then the hard part is the drawings. In a novel, it's kind of the opposite. There aren't any pictures, so you have to write word pictures. And that, for me, was kind of a new experience, and it takes a lot longer. It probably takes a month to write a book.
At least, yes.
Yeah.
And that's interesting that you have taken your art and put it into words. That's a whole brain shift kind of thing.
Yeah. And I'm not sure I've been that successful at that, but the children's book are perfect because it's art and words. I go to a lot of these writer conferences and things and sit on panels, and we talk about how to create children's books. And there'll be an audience of people. There'll be some artists down there who really love to draw but don't have any idea about words. And there'll be a lot of writers down there who have, you know, wonderful stories and don't know how to get them drawn. It's just I'm very lucky that I had both those inclinations.
That's right.
I have a sense of writing, and I love to draw. So I didn't have that problem of trying to hook up with an artist. And you can't overestimate the value of not having an argument with an artist about what the picture should be like. If I have those arguments with myself, I never lose.
That's true, right?
Yeah. It's also difficult to get a publisher if you have a story. Most publishers want their own artists. They don't like to have you say, "Well, I want my friend Larry to do the drawings."
Right.
You know, I haven't experienced that because I generally present the entire thing. And my publisher was okay with that. Well, originally, I sent Snowflake and Rainbow off to HarperCollins, and they held them for a year. Now, I didn't know any better. I thought I would send it to one place. They would take a look at it and say yes or no and send it back, right?
Right.
Well, they kept it for a year, and that to me meant it's in committee, and they're going to eventually say yes if you keep it that long. Well, after a year, they sent it back, and they said no, and I was devastated. You know, I was like, holy cow, I waited all that time. And I was ready to just throw in the towel, but my wife, Jean, you know, picked up the ball and ran over to Rio Grande Books. And they said, yeah, they liked him.
I bet.
So she actually rescued me from my own blue funk.
Well, Ross, tell our audience where they can find you on the web.
Oh, okay. If you just type in rossvandusen.com, that is a website, and on it are all of my children's books.
Uh-huh.
And all of my novels, and a little bit of background, you know, a couple of pages of where the awards and a little bit of stuff like that, plus a place if you want to be on our mailing list or on our email list, a place to sign up and get the latest dirt on what I'm doing. So rossvandusen.com, and I've actually just typed in Ross Van Dusen and found. And it kind of comes up with that. But .com gives you the website.
And on there also are some of your paintings and sculptures?
Yes, yeah. There's the children's books, the novels, and sculpture, and fine art paintings.
Right.
So you get the whole package if you type in rossvandusen.com.
That's great. You're so multi-talented. No wonder you keep busy.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that's as wonderful as it sounds. it's like I'm getting old enough to want to rest a little. I guess that's not in the cards for me. I guess I'm just going to work until I just keel over, I suppose.
That's okay. We enjoy them, and the results are great.
Yeah, well, thank you. As I once told my mother, it keeps me out of prison.
There you go. Well, I've certainly enjoyed reading the books and meeting the Crocodog, and I've enjoyed talking to you, Ross.
Well, I've enjoyed it too, Tracy. Thank you very much.
All right. And that was Ross Van Dusen talking about his books and the famous Crocodog. This is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM, Farmington, New Mexico.